Everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Data Exposed. I'm your host, Scott Klein. With me today is Yos back. It's awesome having you back. Because we always talk about cool stuff.
It's great to be back.
All right. Yeah. So you're back to talk about, I think, the same thing we always talk about when you're here. But this time, it's different. So what are we talking about this time?
We're talking about in-memory OLTP, specifically in Azure SQL Database. So we're going to look at like how you can use this technology, which is now generally available for all premium databases, how you can use it to optimize your performance and actually also introduce some cost savings.
Awesome. So is this any, and I'm looking forward to the demo, because you always come in just like no slides, all demo, and I love that. But is this any different? I mean, do we have to think about it any differently when working with it in Azure SQL Database?
Yeah, you think about it a little bit differently, because when you have on-premise deployments of SQL Server or even in your own data center, other people's data centers, you typically provision the hardware up front. So there's a certain amount, certain server, a certain size that you buy, and you want to get as much performance out of this as possible.
Right. So that server has a specific amount of memory that you purchased and things like that, right?
Yeah, and resources, CPU, disk, IO, all that good stuff. Yep. But then when you think about cloud is all about elasticity. So you want to pay for what you use. You don't want to pay too much.
Right.
If you look at Azure SQL Database specifically, you can scale the database up and down. Right. You can go for your P1, P2, P4, et cetera. And the bigger the number means you get more resources, but you also pay more.
Yep.
And you pay per hour. So if at some point you have a lower workload, you can actually reduce the pricing tier, so you pay less because you need less resources at that point.
And this can be dangerous for in memory because you might, if you've got a table of X amount, of X size, and you go to a lower tier, you might be stepping on that.
We'll get to that, right?
Okay.
Let's start with the positive stuff first.
Okay.
So, all right. If you think about what in-memory OLTP does, is it optimizes performance. It can give you great performance gains, right? Like we have seen. But it gets these performance gains by utilizing resources more efficiently. That means that in the same database for the same pricing tier, you can actually get a higher performance out of that. Or in some cases, you could even use a lower pricing tier with less resources to get the same or better performance than you got before, right? So maybe we should look at an example here. So this is the Azure portal. I'm going to navigate here to this database that I have, running a workload against this database.
Okay.
So this database is kind of a modest premium database. It's a P2. P2 database. It happens to be located in West US. This is one of our production clusters there. And the workload I'm running, as you can see, it's running kind of hot. So what this shows, this tab here, on the database blade, it shows resource consumption, and I decided I wanted to see CPU and log I/O utilization. Oh, this is like this.
Okay.
So in Azure SQL Database, you buy a database at a certain pricing tier, like this is a P2, and I get a certain amount of CPU and a certain amount of log I/O with it, and this shows how much of this resource allocation I am actually using.
Okay.
So as you can see, I'm using about 90% of my CPU, about 85% of my log I/O.
Yeah.
So I'm running really hot.
Yep.
And actually, as you can see at the top here, I'm even getting a warning that I'm running really hot.
Yeah. Which is nice, because that says, hey, do something, right?
Yeah. This tells me, do something about it. Right? So, and this is using traditional disk-based storage procedures traditional tables.
Right? Oh, okay.
So I have in the same data center, I have another P2 database, so it's the same type of database, that is using memory-optimized tables and natively compiled stored procedures. So again, we can see here, this is a P2, again, in the same data center. And we can see that is a dramatic reduction in resource utilization here.
And the only difference here is that one's using The one on the left is using disk-based store procedures and tables, and the one on the right is using in-memory store procedures and tables.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's right. So you can see if you compare the two, the log I/O percentage, it's like 2.5-fold improvement, so yep. 2.5 times less that I'm using. And the CPU is actually only, it's a 9-fold improvement, 1/9.
So this is actually pretty interesting because people go, hey, you know, they may think they need a P2 and start paying for a P2 when they realize I could probably do a lower tier, like a P1.
Yeah,
a P1 and still get, within memory technology and still get good performance out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even better performance, right?
Yeah, even better. Because a P1, it has exactly half the resources of a P2. So it has half the log I/O, half the CPU. But I'm using less than half than I used to use. So I can downgrade to a P1 without a problem.
Yep.
What I can also do is I have now a lot of headroom that I can leverage for increasing the workload.
Yeah.
So the workload is actually ingestion of sensor readings in this case. Right. So actually, let me show you that. So this is just we'll provide a link to this this demo, which is available on GitHub. We'll provide it in the description of the show. What it does is it simulates ingestion of sensor readings.
Okay.
If you think about the smart grid, where each meter outputs a sensor reading once in a while. This gets batched up by the mid-tier application, gets sent to the database in batches. So we have a total of, here we're simulating 50 mid-tier applications that send batches of 1,000 readings to the database. There's a total of 1 million meters, and the total number of rows we are ingesting, or the total number of actual meter readings we are ingesting per second is almost 40,000. So that's about like 1 million meters every meter emitting a reading about every 80 seconds or so.
Okay.
So if you think about the performance improvement that I'm getting, or the reduction in resource utilization I'm getting, is I can ingest also that many more sensor readings into my database every second without actually upgrading a pricing tier. So I can support more than twice the number of meters, or I can support have ingesting the data from the meters more often, so I can get a much more granular view.
Yeah, without upgrading, right? Yeah.
Yeah, without upgrading, and in this case, I'm mainly gated by the log I/O, right?
Okay.
Because I mean, whenever I ingest new data into the database, that results in log I/O.
Yep, okay.
So I can support about 2.5 times the same amount of data ingestion. But this workload is only ingestion. It doesn't run any queries.
Okay, yep.
For queries, you need CPU.
Aha.
And you saw how much CPU I'm freeing up here, right?
Right.
So I'm only using 10%. So I have 90% of my CPU is available for running any queries.
Sure, yep.
Whereas in the before picture, it was only 10%.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So it's a 9-fold improvement of your query processing if you're running
Sweet.
Any, right?
Yeah.
So let's...
Love it.
Yeah, so let's take a brief look at what this looks like in practice in terms of the objects you're adding to your database.
Okay.
So I have kind of one main stored procedure. Let me script it out for you here. That is for inserting meter measurements. So it takes as parameters a batch of meter readings. So this application always has batched up 1,000 readings at a time,
okay.
Right? That is typical. That's typical best practice, right? If you have this kind of scenario where you have sensor readings ingested in a database, you want to batch them up for more efficient processing rather than one at a time, which has a lot of network overhead. Then what we do, we go through the batch, and if there is already a reading for this meter, we update that meter reading. And if it's not there yet, we insert it into the table.
Okay.
And this procedure, of course, for efficiency reasons, it's natively compiled.
Yep. Okay.
Now, what is interesting about these meter readings, you might say, hey, I'm updating the meter reading, so I'm losing the old one, and I want to do historical analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we have here, the table I'm using, so the meter measurement table, this is actually a temporal table.
Oh.
So it's a table maintaining its own history.
So it's not only in memory, it's a temporal table as well.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see this is a memory optimized table, and system versioning is on. Right? That is the indication that this is temporal. Mm-hmm. So it maintains its own history. And if we look here at the Object Explorer, a little bit more detail, you can see I have here both my current table, my meter measurement, and I have my meter measurement history
table,
and the history table gets updated automatically.
Yep.
So whenever I do an update in the current table, automatically a row will get inserted into the history, and I can query everything here. So to show you that this is real, let me just run a quick query to show the row count. So if I look at meter measurement, just my current table, you see we have 1 million rows, mm-hmm. right? Because we are simulating 1 million meters.
Right,
okay. So this table, the current table, always has the latest reading from each meter.
Okay. So it'll always have 1 million.
Yeah, this one will always have 1 million.
Yep.
But then we also have the history table.
Yep.
So if I do a select count star from the meter measurement history table, you see it is processing now for a little bit. So this might be an indication that there are a couple more rows in this
just
table.
Just a few, yeah.
Yeah, I've actually been running this workload now for a couple of days. So there is going to be quite a bit of data in there.
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to show you actually, so we had this, we're talking about sending these batches of meter measurements to the server, right? So we use table values parameters for that. And I will just want to show you the data type that we are using. So this is a table type.
Okay.
A user-defined table type, which you would use for these kinds of sending batches for table value parameters.
Yeah, so the store procedure is using this to
exactly.
Okay.
And this is memory optimized as well.
All right. Oh, interesting. Okay.
And one big benefit of using memory optimized table value parameters is that memory optimized table value parameters are created only in memory in the space of the user database. They're not created in TempDB like traditional table value parameters.
Right, okay.
And everything created in TempDB has some log activity associated with it. And that is actually reflected in the log IO number that we saw. Right?
Okay.
So if you think about this log IO, it's also, to some extent, it's not the full TempDB log IO, but some percentage of the TempDB log IO is reflected in here as well.
In there, yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Let's see if our count star has finished running.
Not yet. So that means there's a lot of rows in there, and
there's a lot of rows
probably
in there.
Quite a few million.
So
okay, yep.
It is clear by now, I guess, that there's more. Let me just show you a top 1,000 from this. So the one thing I want to note here is that, okay, we have here the meter ID, postal code, measurement, the actual measurement.
Yeah.
But then we also have here the start time and the end time. So these are the start time for when this row was valid, and this is the end time for when the row was valid.
Oh, okay.
Because this is all history, this is all data. Right. So all these rows here, they are the results of updates that happened
to in the main table. Yep.
Yeah, and so this is the old version of the row that got moved from the main table.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the main thing I want to show you. So if you will allow me, I would like to kind of talk a little bit about scenarios for when you want to use in-memory OLTP.
Okay.
And because, there's these new type of tables, new types of stored procedures that are introduced, but when should you consider using
them? Right,
that?
Okay.
Right. So one kind of canonical scenario for this technology is your high-throughput OLTP with low-latency requirements.
Yep.
So because of the great scaling and lock-free architecture, you can push a lot of transactions per second through there. And we have seen a lot of customers in like financial, trading, gaming industries, they're using that. A shock absorber for data load. This is about using memory-optimized tables to speed up data ingestion.
Yeah, kind of what you saw here in this example, as well as kind of that ticket reservations example you showed in the last video, right?
Yeah.
Scenarios like that.
Exactly, yeah, where you have a lot of data coming in, and especially if you have spikes in the workload, spikes of data that is coming in. With memory optimized tails, because of the log-free architecture, it's going to be ingested very fast. And if there are spikes in the workload, that's not reflected in the in the latency.
Yep, cool.
And Internet of Things here, that is kind of a special case for this, if you will. What we just looked at, you could call that Internet of Things scenario.
Yeah, because a lot of a lot of these businesses we see have thousands, like millions of devices generating data, sending that in, being ingested by IoT Hub, Event Hub, and right, they need some place to store that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just that quickly.
Well, you need a place to store it, but also to analyze it, right? Yeah. And SQL databases are great at analyzing this data. I mean, you can store this data pretty quickly in a Hadoop cluster or some file share. That can be pretty fast, but how do you get your insights out of that, right? You cannot really run queries very efficiently in an interactive way. And SQL databases are very good at that.
Yep, love it.
And using temporal tables to manage your history. Right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And actually, coming back to that, that is actually one thing I did want to show, since you did touch on that earlier in this example. So actually, we see here a CPU spike because I am running now this query against the history. That's why we see the CPU
spike.
So
when the spike goes back down, we'll know the query's done.
we'll know. So you were asking earlier about the memory footprint, right?
Yeah.
What are we doing about that? Because it is indeed the case that, also, these memory optimized tables, they need to be stored in memory, and your resources are always limited. I mean, also for your traditional disk-based tables, they need to fit in whatever is allocated for your database, right? But for memory optimized, of course, because memory is always more restrictive than disk, there is a certain limit on that. And with each pricing tier, you get a certain amount of data. Like, for example, for P2, you get 2 gigabytes of space for data in memory optimized tables.
Yeah.
And you can monitor that similarly to these here. So let me just add that option. I can add in-memory OLTP storage.
Okay.
That is the option we're looking at. So this has been added here. And you can see that it has been holding fairly steady at around 10%. There is a spike at the end. That's because of additional processing happening on the server. So there's a kind of build-up of a tail. But the reason why this remains so limited is that if you have a temporal memory optimized table, only the current version of the data needs to fit in memory. All the history is offloaded to disk automatically.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And you see here a kind of a jagged pattern, and that is because the offload to disk happens in batches, because that is more efficient.
Okay.
Right. And we have in this case, because the history table is very busy, the offload is
taking a while,
is hanging for a little bit. So we should probably not run this query, or maybe we should add a column store index to the history, use partitioning with the history table.
Yep.
It's not partitioned. I should use partitioning. By the way, partitioning is also fully supported in Azure SQL Database.
Sweet.
So,
okay. Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Now, so to continue with our scenarios here, so session state and caching. So in-memory OLTP has been very successful with ASP.NET session state, so where you're maintaining the state for your web front end. You want the web front end to be stateless, maintain it in the server, and even replacing distributed caches by just a single database that can perform all your caching needs. In-memory OLTP tends to be SQL Server with in-memory OLTP or Azure SQL Database with in-memory OLTP tends to be much more efficient and scales much better, provides much better response times than typical caching solutions. TempDB replacement. We talked about that a couple of shows back.
And that was I think very educational for how TempDB is used in these scenarios.
Exactly. We touched earlier on in this show. We touched a little bit on table valued parameters and how you can get some benefits from that by making them memory optimized. But also you can think about replacing your temp tables with memory optimized schema only tables. To further reduce your resource utilization. Okay. And data load scenarios for ETL, for example, you have a data mart and you want to load data regularly.
As an ETL process,
You can use this for your staging tables to load the data efficiently and do a transformation efficiently.
Good. Is there a kind of a, because this has been extremely helpful, how we think about, you know, kind of the differences between how we work with in-memory on-premises versus in-memory, you know, in Azure SQL Database, but is there some, and kind of these are great scenarios, but can we also think of, and here's our list of some, I think, best practices as well. But is there some best practices that, or some gotchas that we need to think about? Hey, I want to migrate my database from on-premises to Azure SQL Database. You know, what do I need to think about if I'm using in-memory in that, right?
Now you need to think about mainly what are your storage needs.
Yep.
Right. So look at the existing footprint of your memory optimized tables, and then look at what is the storage quota that you get with the target pricing tier that you're looking at in Azure SQL Database.
Might there be some changes they need to make given the tier they're selecting or the other storage they need?
Yeah, if it doesn't fit, right?
Then you might have to go up a tier.
Then you need to go up a tier or offload some of it to disk, for example.
Right. But I think that the takeaway from that is do your homework first, right? Figure out what actually will work. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great.
Absolutely. And but also keep in mind kind of these scenarios like this data ingestion with temporal tables where we automatically manage the in-memory storage footprint, and also things like where you replace some TempDB objects where typically you have a limited storage footprint requirement. Those are kind of things you can keep.
So I think that's actually a good, should people be thinking about using temporal with in-memory, or is it on a case by, is it based on the scenario, right? Because that, you know, obviously, hey, you know, a million rows at a time are in my data, are in that table and everything else is offloaded. So is it based on scenario or should we be thinking, you know, should I be using temporal with within memory table?
Well, it's always based on the scenario, right? So memory optimized tables, they are really good if there is a lot of data ingestion and a lot of data access generally, right? If it's very busy and especially if there's a lot of DML happening, a lot of concurrency.
Yep.
So for something like IoT where you're ingesting a lot of data, absolutely you want to use memory optimized right?
Yep.
But if you think about something like a slowly changing dimension table in a data mart or data warehouse. Yeah. They're probably not because you have a data load. It comes in batches, so you will not get that much benefit.
Well, I'm talking more specifically around definitely in memory OLTP. But should I be thinking about temporal or with in memory?
Yeah. Absolutely. So always think about. Is your data historical in nature?
Right. Like
we saw with sensor readings, without temporal tables, you can do it, of course. You just insert a new row for every reading.
For every reading.
And then you add up with a huge table that has both the current readings and well as all the history. But if you think about it, the data is historical in nature. So it is a single sensor that emits a new reading once in a while. So it essentially changes over time, right?
And so in this
power
scenario,
utilization changes over time. So for those cases,
So in this scenario, it's basically because I'm not going to have the same sensor, you know, in the same table, right? Multiple readings for that same sensor.
That's right.
But I think, you know, my question was, you know, typically we don't think about, or at least I wouldn't think about, in memory, but should I be also thinking about, well, what are the benefits of temporal at the same time, right? And I think what we're saying is, based on the scenario, we should, you know, a part of that same thought process should be, can I leverage temporal to actually improve in-memory OLTP, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a great tool for managing your memory footprint.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Great.
So that's definitely something you want to
awesome.
Consider.
This was fantastic, and I love the fact that we can, you know, the visual in there, and the fact that, look, because of you know, I can actually lower my price simply by going to another tier and still have room to grow within that tier simply by using in-memory OLTP.
That's right.
That's great. And I think that's, you know, people may not think of that. So I'm glad you highlighted that because it was very nice. Anyway, Joost, thanks for coming. Always a joy to have you.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Look forward to having you back fairly soon.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
So everybody, hopefully this was helpful. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.